Economist professor at Columbia University, former chief economist of World Bank. He's author of many books, his latest, Creating a Learning Society, a new approach to growth, development, and social progress. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking at the Mark Twain House in Hartford, Connecticut, Monday, July 21st at 7 p.m., and Martha's Vineyard, Saturday, July 26th, 7 p.m. at Catherine Cornell Auditorium in Vineyard Haven. Check out democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Malkoff, Hadi Masood, Ravi Karen, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield, Harmeen, Gibb, with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today we'll get an update from Latoya Harris and her 9-year-old daughter, who was arrested by Portland police and hauled off to jail in her bathing suit.
KBOO Community Radio proudly co-sponsors the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on Thursday, July 17th from 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. at Holocene, located at 1001 Southeast Morrison. This fundraiser opens with an ocean art show and silent auction, followed by a screening of the surf film Seven Signs. Then the reggaetronic five-piece band Everyday Profits takes center stage at 10 p.m. Again, that's the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on July 17th. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Art Burst Northwest Saturday and Sunday, August 2nd and 3rd at Merrillhurst University. Art Burst Northwest is produced by and for artists, open for all to attend, and celebrating arts and creativity of the region, with the accompaniment of food, music, shaded dining, and lounging in a relaxed outdoor atmosphere. More than 100 Pacific Northwest artists from all media will show their work.
Again, that's Art Burst Northwest Saturday, August 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Sunday, August 3rd, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Merrillhurst University, between the cities of Lake Oswego and West Lynn. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It is my pleasure to have here in the studio this morning Latoya Harris and her daughter, Tyranny. Did I get it right?
Yes.
Been practicing all morning. Welcome you both to the studio.
Thank you.
Welcome Latoya back, and welcome Tyranny for the first time. And so, as I mentioned when you got here, we want to spend a little bit of time talking about your experience with Portland Police. But first, I want to find out, what is your favorite topic in school?
Reading.
Ah. I love reading, too. So are you one of those kids, those nerdy kids with a bunch of books that you walk around with all the time?
Well, I wouldn't say nerdy, but...
Well, that was me. I was definitely the nerdy kid with lots of books, and I loved it. And you know what? I still read. I still read all the time. And so it's summer, so you must be out doing fun things. What kind of fun things are you doing this summer?
I like knitting in the park, taking my rabbit outside.
Mm-hmm. Knitting? Man, I used to knit in the old days. Boy, you're bringing back all these memories of the good old days when I was free and had summers off. And so you are going to have a birthday next week. How old are you going to be?
11.
11. Wow. And what grade are you starting in?
Six.
Oh, so just about done with elementary school, headed into middle school, eh? Well, so looking forward to that?
Yeah.
And where are you going to school?
Since we're kind of moving, mm-hmm. it's like
You're not quite sure yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But mom's got that covered. Mom will hook you up with that. Mm-hmm. So we want to spend a little time talking about, you had this experience that I don't know any other nine-year-old had, right? A couple of years ago, you had this very weird experience. You were home. You want to tell us what happened that day?
I had got back from the water fountains mm-hmm. at the park. Mm-hmm. And I was in my swimsuit, and when I had came home, my mom had made dinner, so I started eating, and then all I know is I hear a loud knock at the door, mm-hmm. and my mom goes answers it, and it is the police, mm-hmm. and they were talking to my mom, and then my mom called me and told me to come here, mm-hmm. and then they started questioning me.
Mm-hmm. And how did they question you? I mean, do you remember any of the questions they were asking?
I remember, like, they kept asking me what happened, and I told them plenty of times, and I told them the truth, and mm-hmm. he kept saying, tell me what really happened, or tell the truth.
And do you remember whether that was Officer David McCarthy, or whether that was Officer Matthew Husbick?
I think it was McCarthy.
Okay. Okay, so keep going. So he was asking you, and was this kind of intimidating?
Yes, because he was bigger than me, and he had a gun, and he wasn't afraid to show it. Like, his shirt was tucked in to where you could actually see it.
Oh, so you could see his gun. So that's a little intimidating, huh? But you're home, and your mom's there, so you're feeling like, okay. All right, so what else happened?
And then all I know is he said, put your hands behind your back.
He told you to put your hands behind your back?
Yes. And then he put the handcuffs on me and walked me to the car. And then once we got in the car, he read me my rights.
Wow. And then he took you to the police station?
He took me to downtown, but I don't really remember because yeah. I was like really...
A little freaked out?
Yeah. I couldn't believe that was actually happening.
Yeah, me either when I heard it.
I sat in this room for like an hour, and then they came and took my fingerprints and stuff, and then I heard a loud bang and they opened the door, and then my mom was there. I wanted to cry so bad.
And you didn't cry?
No.
I'd have been in tears the entire time. But so your mom was there, but you were there for a long time waiting for your mom.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't let your mom come with you?
No.
And did they say why?
No.
Wow. And so that happened almost 2 years ago, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah? And how do you feel about what happened to you?
I feel like it was just really unfair. Mm. But, I mean, it could be a lesson, but, like, it didn't have to go that far.
Right. And what lesson would a 9-year-old learn from being handcuffed, taken to jail, you think?
I mean, it's not, like, a good lesson, but, like, not to fight and not to, like, get in trouble mm-hmm. like that. Or that will happen in the future. It shouldn't have happened then.
Right.
But, like, it would happen when you get older.
Right. But your mom had already punished you, huh?
Yeah.
And the Boys and Girls Club had already punished you?
Yes.
And that wasn't something you normally did?
No.
Right. So you had never been in trouble before?
At the Boys and Girls Club? No.
Mm-hmm. And so how has this impacted you? Do you feel like, were you embarrassed? Did your friends see you being arrested? Did they know?
Yeah, some people did see me. Mm-hmm. And I was really embarrassed, like, I was almost in tears because, like, as soon as I came back, the next day I had to go to school, and everybody was talking about what happened, and it was terrible.
I bet that was. And I'm curious, so you still live in the same area for the moment. Your mom and I are going to talk about you moving. But you see these same police officers regularly? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They work in your community, huh?
Yes.
And so how do you feel when you see them now?
I feel sad, and I also feel angry, and I kind of like think about what happened, and mm-hmm. that's the part that makes me really sad.
Mm-hmm. When you think about what happened?
Yeah.
Because you don't think any other kid should be handcuffed and taken to jail, do you?
No.
No. Do you think there's any circumstance where that should happen?
Like, if you see the child with, like, a weapon in their hand about to hurt somebody really bad or even kill somebody, then maybe, but no.
No, I totally, totally agree with you. I think that that was just a bad thing and it should not have happened to you. And so what's been the impact on you? Are you, now your mom was telling me that you're just starting to, like, be outgoing. Like, I saw that sparkle in your eye when I met you this morning. So I know that you've got this beautiful personality.
Yeah, it's been getting kind of better. Like, I've been going to the park more. I used to just stay inside and knit all day, like, work on so many projects.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to put my order in for knitting. So, if you got some free time over the summer and you need a new project, I can help you because I like knit stuff. I think it's very cool. In fact, I need a new vest, but we can talk about that off the air. So how are you feeling now when you see a police officer anywhere? How does that, what's the first thought that comes to your mind?
The first thought is, like, they could do that to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, like, scary. Mm-hmm. Like, and they think they're right, and they think they can do whatever they want, and they really can't.
And what was your feeling before that? I mean, I'm sure you've seen police in your neighborhood before.
Before that, I was, like, smaller, so I was like, ooh, I want a sticker, I want a sticker.
Ah, but, so you were one of those kids that would race out when you saw them to get a sticker from the cops?
Yeah.
Right? Ah, and now?
I'll pass on the sticker.
Not so much now, huh? So, any idea yet what you're going to do when you get out of school?
We're already out of school.
No. I mean, when you're out of school. Like,
forever?
When you graduate, yeah.
Like, permanently?
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm thinking maybe you want to be a lawyer so you can, like, prosecute bad cops like that, or...
I would, but, like, I'd rather be, like, somebody who designs homes. Like, all
design
day.
Homes. Yeah. Oh, all right. I like that. Well, I appreciate you spending time talking to me today because I know this is not an easy thing to talk about. And I wanted to be very respectful of the fact that this was a really bad experience. But that bad experience doesn't define who you are, right? You were a beautiful young lady before this happened, and you're a beautiful young lady now.
Thank you.
And so maybe at 11, it's a little too early to be finding out what you're going to do when you graduate school. She's like, all of it? So I'll ask you that one in a couple of years or so. And so what are you looking forward to most when school starts again?
I'm looking forward to, like, being at a new school and, like, meeting new people, making new friends.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I, again,
Tyranny.
Tyranny, thank you so much for talking to me. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you would want people to know about this experience?
I think we covered pretty much everything.
You think we covered it all? All right. Well, I want to thank you very much. I'm going to excuse you so that I can talk to your mom.
Okay.
Thank you so much for talking to me today.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. Okay, the number to call if you want to join the conversation is 503-281-8187. I am talking to Latoya Harris, and just talked to the fabulously wonderful Tiana. And she's going to go out and hang out in the lobby while Mom and I continue our conversation. So first, thank you so much, Latoya, for bringing her in. She is absolutely delightful. And what a beautiful young woman.
Thank you. A young girl.
I really, really appreciate the opportunity to talk to her and meet her. Mm-hmm. And what a sparkle she is. I can understand why you are so proud.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had you here on June 26th, and we were sharing a story about what happened.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to have TT here today to actually, from her own mouth and her own words, be able to describe to us what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But the last time you were here, we talked about you facing an eviction hearing.
Yes.
I know that the listeners want to know what happened.
I have to be out by Monday, and I have been evicted.
And I don't think that, and I think we should probably go back and say, so there was an incident at your house.
Yes.
I should say outside your house. Mm-hmm. On what day?
I believe I want to say end of May.
End of May.
Yes.
There was
not quite sure of the date.
Right, right. Because I think maybe the end of May, 1st of June, sometime in that time period,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's an incident outside your house with mm-hmm. your son, mm-hmm. who's 20-something, and his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, it was a domestic disturbance. She bashed the windshield of the car with the golf club, and my son was trying to get it from her.
Mm-hmm.
But yet somehow Officer McCarthy and Haspec show up on the scene, and by the time they got done with their biased, embellished report, it went from a domestic disturbance to domestic violence. And my property manager did not want to hear a word from me. He seemed more interested in protecting the officer's rights
mm-hmm.
than my daughter and my rights.
Right.
So the eviction trial. This was the part that blew my mind. I thought I might can fight this.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't think most people know, because until I showed up on your first day at mm-hmm. court,
mm-hmm.
I had no idea that this is the process of what happens when someone in a community is facing eviction. So let's try to paint the picture for folks. So mm-hmm. you show up downtown Multnomah County Courthouse.
Yes.
Second floor, I believe.
No,
the first floor.
Yeah.
And the room is filled of people that are elderly, that are disabled, that are people of color, that are people with mental health issues. Clearly, people in that room have been traumatized
yes.
in some way, shape, or form.
Yes.
And the judge appeared to be
indifferent.
Only interested in what landlords had to say.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to hear anything from any of the people. All the conversation was mm-hmm. between the landlord and the judge.
Yes.
The day I was there.
Mm-hmm.
So the day you go, and so you asked for a trial.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then you have to pay for a trial,
yes.
which was something that blew my mind.
Yes.
And so for the listening audience, so imagine this. Imagine you're facing eviction. You're in court, and they say, okay, well, oh, you want a trial? You want the judge to decide whether or not you should be evicted? Well, you can do that, but it costs you money.
Mm-hmm.
It costs $69 for the court trial, mm-hmm. and it costs $1 for the paperwork to fill out to request the court trial. So if you are a poor person facing eviction and you don't have $70 readily available,
mm-hmm.
I don't believe you will get your day in court.
No, you won't.
Unless you sign something to agree that you're going to figure out how to pay that $70. And so that appalled me. I had no idea that that's what poor people faced when they. And of course, because it's not a criminal proceeding,
mm-hmm.
poor people have no representation at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the landlords, they come with their lawyers and they come with police and they come with a whole bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But and then you've got poor people standing up against the system of the landlord and their lawyers and a court system that, quite frankly, just wants to move them in and move them out.
Yes.
I was absolutely appalled.
Okay,
so that was what I saw. You went back the day of your trial.
And it was pretty much even worse. Right before my trial, I seen a judge evict a 78-year-old woman in a wheelchair
right.
just for being $110 short on her rent. So I pretty much knew that my defense was limited as mm-hmm. far as me defending myself. But what appalled me and angered me even more was that the property manager and his attorney showed up along with Officer McCarthy, Officer Haspec, and Sergeant McDaniels. They're all standing in the hallway, laughing and joking amongst each other, smiling at me and my daughter's misfortune.
Right.
As if they were all too happy that this was the outcome. Never mind intimidation mm-hmm. and the harassment that has happened prior to all of this.
Right.
The parking up my street, the riding down up and down my street. It's been
So ever since it became public that you attempted to hold Officer Matthew Husbeck and Officer David McCarthy accountable for the egregious behavior that they displayed towards your daughter, they have been on a course of harassment.
Yes.
We hear this from community members all the time, but rarely are community members willing to publicly say that they are being harassed by the police. But I want to get back to the case because this was outside your home. So no one called the police.
No.
It was just their normal intimidation of riding up and down your street.
That they heard.
They heard
That's
about
what
it.
They said. Yeah, they heard it.
They stopped. Now, you had a certified letter from your son's girlfriend stating that she was the aggressor, that he did not hit her, that there was no violence other than the violence she displayed against the automobile, and yet that was not sufficient.
No.
It didn't happen in your home. And what was the, so what did they evict you for?
Basically, having unruly guests that threatened the property and its residents.
So that was the police narrative that somehow your son and his girlfriend...
That he beat her up. Okay, that's what they said, that he beat her up and threatened her with the golf club.
And is that in the police report?
Yes.
And so, you know, and I don't want to, I don't want to suggest that you go to the so-called independent police review.
Oh, I did.
Oh, you did?
That night, I did. See, Friday, this happened on a Wednesday. That much I remember. Okay, by Friday, Friday morning, I filed the report.
Right.
And by Monday evening, I have a 24-hour eviction notice on my door.
Wow.
So I feel like I'm being, me and my daughter being penalized because I'm advocating for my daughter and speaking out publicly.
Right.
So now we're being penalized and forced out of our home that we've been in for 5 years.
Right. With never a problem.
No. No. This is my first ever eviction in my life.
And so tell the listening audience like the egregious deal that they worked so that that you wouldn't fight the eviction.
They worked it out to where I have to leave the property on the 21st, and if I do, they will dismiss the case and void the eviction.
So you got to move, but they're not going to actually, they're going to pretend that this is not an eviction, that you're kind of moving because you just feel like you need something to do this summer.
I guess that's the pretense they're trying to put it under.
I have to tell you, I'm pretty appalled. I mean, I'm appalled by a lot of the systems that we have, but this one is pretty appalling. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And so, okay, so you go to court. As you said, you were seeing the writing on the wall, because did anyone have their eviction stopped while you were in there? You said you were the last case, right?
No.
So everyone who showed up in front of that judge.
Yeah, it was only three cases. I was number three.
Right.
And the two other people were evicted.
Right. And they were evicted immediately,
They had to be out on the same day I had to be out.
Ah.
Yeah.
And so fighting, paying the $70
is a loss.
Gives you, no, actually it gave you more time, right?
Yes,
because if you had not paid the $70, we saw people that day that had to be out noon the next day, right?
Yeah,
so, and so, okay, so I have to say, the way that you have handled this is really impressive, and I admire your sense of self, your sense of justice in this whole process, because you know most people, you would go off the deep end and really want to hurt someone, and you would be looking for the nearest person in a uniform, in a Portland police uniform, to do that to. I can understand how you would feel that way, but what I love about your response has been, is it's about my daughter. And so the first thing is getting into a place so in time so that she's ready to start school, so she doesn't miss a beat when school starts next month. So you filed a complaint.
Yeah, just the day after.
The day after. Yeah. And have you heard back from the so-called independent police review?
Yes, he came by. He interviewed me and my daughter.
Right.
And yeah, he's proceeding on with the case.
Yeah, I'm sure that a year from now you'll get a letter from him saying that they've investigated and they have found that the police have done nothing wrong. I think what you are highlighting for us is a systemic problem within Portland Police Bureau.
Yeah.
And the problem is so systemic that the mayor and his wisdom decided that he needed a police officer to be his public safety director. That's Deanna Wesson Mitchell. Who has been really not helpful to you.
No, condescending and different toward my daughter and me. It's been, she's the one that interfered in the tort claim. It was her.
So it was Deanna Wesson Mitchell, who thought that your daughter's pain and suffering, a couple of thousand dollars would be sufficient. And she was the one that was working with the mayor that came back with that proposal for you.
She's
been an apologist for the police ever since she's been on the police force. And the fact that she's in the mayor's office is disrespectful to the public who believes that when they call the mayor's office asking for the director for the police bureau, that they're going to get some assistance in actually solving problems. Instead, what they find is a woman who has 4 years to decide whether she wants to be a police officer again. So there's no incentive for her to change any of the behavior that happens within Portland Police Bureau.
No.
We have a caller on the line. Hello, Brian. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, you know, I just want to make a comment about this, as usual. So, you know, I think I'm just macroizing it or whatever. But, you know, I really think that I ask people all the time, I mean, aren't you ashamed of yourself for supporting and allowing this system to continue? And, you know, I mean, inevitably people look away and they say, well, there's nothing we can do about it. This is our system, and you know we're creating right now. If this person you're talking to did not have the wherewithal, you know, the street smarts, the you know, the gumption or whatever it is to get up and move ahead, she'd be on the street with her daughter.
That's right. That's
and you know, I mean, fortunately, you know, I mean, this is the case. But for most people out there, they would sink into an immobile depression. And then who would take care of them? You know, and what would happen to the child, et cetera, et cetera. It just keeps going on. And, you know, the whole theme of my thought goes like this, is like, what is making us allow this to happen? You know, why do we keep allowing the police force and this system to retaliate against poor people? And I mean, how can we live with ourselves any longer? The inevitable thing is, you know, is they're going to, you know, everybody's going to end up affected by this. And there's so many people that are ignoring it, and they're going to be directly affected by it. And that's what I have to say. And, you know, I wish I could, you know, do something to impact this situation. But, I mean, the only thing we can do is, you know, just vocally say, you know, I mean, you people are crazy in the police department, and the people are evicting this person.
But, you know, there is something we can do. I mean, supposedly we have a city council who's been duly elected that is responsible for the oversight of our police bureau. And so I don't want to in any way negate their responsibility to make the police force actually work the way it's supposed to work. I don't know if you listened to the show last week when I talked about the Multnomah County Gang Assessment Survey report, the 500-page report that Portland Police and other law enforcement want us to believe. There's 133 gangs operating in the city of Portland. The reality is they would know a gang member if they fell over one. Because if you look at their definition, any three people hanging out together can be a gang, which is ludicrous because they shoot individuals that they think might be gang members. So it's, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all about money. It's all about fighting for federal resources so that they can continue to overpolice black and brown communities. And quite frankly, I'm just amazed that people aren't more outraged that this kind of activity continues to happen. They just started again this Operation Cool Down, which the last time they did that, they arrested 300 people in 1 month, and they claimed the program before was to get guns and weapons out of the hands of youth. They found less than one weapon of the 300 people arrested. Most were 40 years old and older. Most were arrested for alcohol crimes. So I don't trust this police bureau. I don't trust their narrative. I don't trust their description of gang activity, because when I see them operating, they are the biggest gang that operates in the city of Portland.
And I think the people we can directly blame for the, you know, the increase in the, you know, and the constant growth of this, you know, system is Charlie Hales and Mike Reese. Well, and why,
absolutely.
You know,
we have a police commissioner that seems to be absent and seems to have turned over oversight to the person who's most responsible for the egregious behavior of their police officers. Did you just hear that Kroger, the Nazi sympathizer, Mike Reese just wrote him a long, glowing letter of recommendation. He just got 80 hours of back pay. He got $5,000 because he was sued, and they removed all the Nazi sympathizer information from his personnel file, even though the public knows that the city attorneys were hiding the Nazi plaques in their office while the lawsuit was taking place. I mean, this stuff is so, this is such a corrupt system. And when the mayor, Charlie Hales, ran for mayor, he said he ran to clean up Portland Police. And Portland Police is worse today than it was when he took office. And so whose fault is that? That's the buck stops with the police commissioner. This is the most egregious police force. This is by far, Mike Reese will go down as the worst police chief the city of Portland has ever had as far as protecting the constitutional rights of the people who live here.
Amen.
And so, want to call us? Give us a call at 503.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you. Have a great day. Forgot you were there, Brian. Sorry, I went off on a deep end, but I do that sometimes. The number to call, 503-231-8187. And that's what happens when you know too much information about the egregious activities of various Portland police officers and how they cover each other. And they sue each other. They just paid the woman who filed the complaint against Kroger, they just paid her off at $50,000. She's also a police officer. They paid her off for a $50,000 settlement because when she filed the complaint against his Nazi sympathizer ways, and of course the internal affairs investigated and found nothing wrong.
Of course they
never
do.
Because, of course, right, they didn't do anything wrong. So when he takes the letter and puts it up on the wall with her name on it, so she files suit. Now, she gets $50,000 for the suit that she files, and then the idiot Nazi sympathizer, who I understand is a training officer with Portland Police Bureau, now gets his record stripped clean of all the egregious behavior that's in it, and he gets money from the taxpayers on top of that. 80 hours back, he gets $5,000 in cash. I mean, it's like, what is wrong with this picture?
It is so appalling and sad, and it's just, I realize that this system is corrupt from the bottom on up. Like, it is, I think we need to call in an intervention on Portland, Oregon. I think we need to get some help from Washington, D.C. or something.
Well, unfortunately, we did that. We actually called the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division to come to Portland to investigate Portland Police Bureau into the pattern and practices of how they treated African-American men. In 2010, we made that request as part of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. We are still awaiting the federal judge's decision on whether he will accept the settlement agreement that was negotiated behind closed doors with Sam Adams and the Department of Justice. The settlement agreement requires us spending over $5 million over the next 5 years, primarily hiring people for the police bureau and the so-called independent police review. It is the most ludicrous settlement agreement. It does nothing. Oh, and then they did a bait and switch. They didn't investigate African Americans. They investigated people with mental health issues. And so even in spite of the bait and switch that they did, the settlement agreement doesn't give one penny for people with mental health issues, but a lot of money for the police bureau to develop a behavioral health unit. And that's the other thing. The problem is that Portland police officers are way out of their lane. Now we have Portland police deciding who's mentally ill, who's appropriate to go into a mental health facility. We have Portland police officers now deciding who gets housing, alcohol, and drug treatment through this service coordination team process that happens downtown behind closed doors with no public oversight. They have access to mental health beds, to alcohol and drug treatment beds, to housing assistance if people will plead guilty to something so that the police will have oversight over them. I mean, we're turning Portland into a police state, and we have the most egregious leader in charge of this police state because he looks good and he talks good, but he lies through his teeth on a regular basis.
Oh, yes.
We have a caller on the line. We're going to go. Hello, Juan. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Joanne, let me ask you, do you remember, I'm down in Schrader's district, and we had Hooley before that, and then there was a woman who was originally born in South Africa that was...
Elizabeth First. Elizabeth First.
Right. So I can remember when I first moved to Portland 20 years ago, she sent out a newsletter talking about how what a great thing it was that we were militarizing the police force.
What?
And I looked at this and I thought, I don't understand how this is a great idea.
Right.
And I probably wrote her at the time and said, no, this is not what we want to be doing. And I think what we're seeing with the Portland police is a result of the militarization of the police force.
That's right.
So anyway. I think it comes from D.C., and I think we need to fix it locally.
Oh, you might be right.
You know, actually, you're absolutely right. The Department of Justice has created these over-militarized police forces because anytime you can write to the Department of Justice for tens of millions of dollars so that you can fight gangs, so that you can fight drugs, and that's why the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division is not the people to fix what's broken.
I realize that now.
Yeah, the grant that I talked, the Multnomah County Gang Assessment Report, the whole reason that report was written so that it would support a federal grant so that they could, again, bring in more federal dollars so they can target more black and brown boys in our community. That's
right.
And ultimately
what it's all for is when we're finally fed up and we've had enough and we all get out in the street, Who do you think they're going to protect and serve?
Exactly.
The community or the people in D.C.?
Well, we certainly saw that when Occupy was out, right? It was like the police stayed fully in their riot gear until we went to buildings, right? You went to the bank building, all of a sudden there were more police than there were protesters. You go, you know, it's like, so that's when the police come out, when it's about protecting business interests. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with protecting people. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too. So I just got a note that says Kruger is now head of vice and drugs. So that means that Mike Reese has consistently promoted
bad behavior,
bad police officers mm-hmm. into higher leadership positions. Mm-hmm. I cannot. So that's why he wrote that glowing letter, because he knew he was about to promote this Nazi sympathizer. So when he was publicly identified as a Nazi sympathizer, he moved him into the training bureau. Now that he's going to pay him off for being a Nazi sympathizer, he's now being promoted to vice and drugs. Something is desperately wrong within Portland Police Bureau.
I agree.
And it starts at the top. Reese has to go.
He do.
Mike Reese must go. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, if we don't get a better police commissioner, I think he might have to go too. Back to the phone line. Hello, Ross. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, hello, Joanne and you folks there. I have to say, I've been a father of three daughters, and when I hear what happened to I'm sorry, the name, your name slipped my mind.
Her name's LaToya. Yes. LaToya's daughter.
Yes, uh-huh. Of course. LaToya, that, just to stand up and let this be beyond you, and you're bigger than that. You're bigger than those thugs that are on the police department, and you're a great young girl, and I wish you all the best. I had my three daughters, if I mention any of that, I just can't imagine what that would be like, and so I just want to tell you, I think the whole community and will be is behind you, and will always be behind you, so keep on with that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I do have a thought. I've seen a lot of this, and your experience is something that really tells something really important community needs to know, and that is how people need to be afraid of the police, are justified to be afraid of the police, are justified to be afraid of calling the police in communities, shall we say, marginal communities or the underserved communities.
Yes.
And because the intimidation and harassment is real, I've seen it in my neighborhoods.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. One thought is, I find that the ability to complain or to bring something to attention is sort of centralized. You have to go to some place downtown or whatever, or
right,
some authority. It seems to me that every neighborhood association and should have a service where they don't, because they all have at times when they invite a police officer to talk about how many crimes have been committed. They need to have, I'm thinking that we should have maybe pastors in the community to form a pastor's committee for police review, so they can hear with some degree of confidentiality and security, at least know what's going on. Hear citizen complaints in every neighborhood.
Well, you know, I think that we need to be creative, because what we know is what we have doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
The neighborhood system is not the best system, because it is so tied into the police crime prevention office.
Exactly.
I know when the police come to my neighbor night out, their sole purpose is to scare the white retired homeowners into demanding they get more money. Because they paint the narrative of crime. They create the fear in the community, and it's all about money. And so I agree. We absolutely need a way to hold police accountable for their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But we need a totally different system. We need an independent system that is really independent, and that will have the ability to subpoena police and hold them accountable and recommend discipline. And we need to do that as soon as we possibly can. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Thank
okay,
you.
We'll be talking. Bless
have
you
a great
all.
Day. You too. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Did you want to get in here, LaToya?
Well, yeah. I do just want to say that I am even more appalled because not only are we being forced out of our home, and if, you know, I was more concerned for my daughter's mental and emotional well-being.
Right.
Seeing all these officers and the fact that they keep coming back, you know, she's made great strides, thanks to the good Lord and her counselor. So she has been doing well.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I need is for their presence to cause a setback.
That's right. That's
and they don't, they're not above intimidating a child. And I told you about her rabbit at the park. My daughter won't even take that rabbit to the park without a leash now. She does not want any excuse for these officers to approach her.
Right, right. Well, she mentioned that she's just barely started going back to the park, right?
Yes, yes, because she was so withdrawn and would just
stay in the house. That's what she said.
Yeah, yeah, just scared to go out.
You know, this is just wrong. This is wrong. It's wrong on so many levels. It is just so wrong on so many levels, and I'm just so frustrated because you know, what frustrates me is the more I know about your particular situation, the more I realize that yours is just a story I've heard, right? If you weren't the kind of mother that actually went and filed a complaint with the official with the official body that we know won't do anything because they throw out 70% of the complaints that come in, we already know their job is to be the gatekeeper to make sure they don't have to hold police accountable. So the fact that you even used that system, it took you a year to get through that process for them to tell you that the officers did nothing wrong. It's absolutely ludicrous. We have a couple of callers on the line. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hello?
Hi. Welcome.
Hello. Yeah, listen, I think this corruption goes beyond the police.
Yes.
And I have a grandson that's got brown skin, and he's been turned down several times as a child and young adult for his Social Security disability. And it so happened his last attorney was Alan Graf when he got turned down. And we found out later on, but doesn't help us any, that the judge, that judge, was a racist, and was a known racist in the system about Social Security, but nobody does anything about it. But another thing, I don't know this for sure, but I believe Alan Graf had to leave Portland or Oregon because of his politics and the police. And you can poo-poo me, trivialize me, and invalidate me. But anyway, I'm getting off the air.
Thank you for your call, and I won't trivialize or invalidate you, but I will say that that's simply not true. I just spoke with Alan Graf yesterday, and he left town because he was in love, and he wanted to go live on the farm with his new wife. So he was, in fact, one of the only lawyers that would sue Portland police. So he was definitely not one to be intimidated by the police. And in fact, he won the biggest settlement ever up until that point anyway, against Portland police around the Bush protest march. So I know way much more about Alan Graf than I should. Back to the phone line. Hello, Pete. Welcome to KBOO.
So would you spell it out when you say it's all about money? Run it down, put it together, let's see the connections.
Oh, did I not do that? Okay, so if you go
spell it out.
I thought I did spell it out. I thought all you have to do is go to Multnomah County, in your search engine, put Multnomah County Gang Assessment Report. It will pop up. You will read from all the police agencies about the massive amount of gang activity, 133 gangs by their account. And then all you have to do is look at the city council agenda and continue to follow that for all the federal money they're writing for to actually fight this epidemic of gang activity. It's not rocket science. It's very easy to connect the dots. And I've just given you your first lesson 101, how to connect the dots in local government.
Thank you much.
You're welcome. Have a great day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So, LaToya, I am so outraged that you are being forced to move out of your home. But I also think maybe looking at it as the cup half full is that your daughter won't have to see these two officers daily, right? So David McCarthy and Matthew Husbeck.
Oh, they have a new partner. Their sergeant is now backing them. So wherever they show up, Sergeant McDaniels is sure to follow.
Sergeant McDaniels. Now, why is that name familiar to me?
Because he pepper sprayed a woman in the mouth during Occupy Portland.
It's amazing how they get promoted after they do outrageous stuff.
Yes. And
so, you know, we have a serious problem. I mean, we're not joking, but we do have an absolutely serious problem. And our problem is that we have a police bureau that thinks that they get to decide everything. They get to decide what communities are gang infested. They get to decide what the police action is to address the gang infestation. Mm-hmm. They get to label community boys and girls, children, as gang members. Mm-hmm. They get to develop files on kids to pretend that they have a file on gangs. Mm-hmm. And the people don't know how they got on the list. They don't know how to get off the list. Portland police has been caught before keeping list of gang members of black kids that weren't gang members.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that your daughter, I would be asking for the fingerprint card of mm-hmm. my daughter back from Portland police.
Mm-hmm.
They have no business having her fingerprints on file.
I should do that.
You should do that immediately. You should go to the downtown, the central precinct, mm-hmm. and demand that fingerprint. Why would they want a fingerprint of a 9-year-old child?
They didn't just fingerprint it. They took her photos, too. They get mug shots.
You want the pictures and the card.
Yes, I would.
You
I
want
would
all
like that
stuff back.
Yes.
Because you do not want her in some secret database that the police is creating
mm-hmm.
for our kids.
Yes.
This is serious business.
Thank you, Joanne,
for bringing that.
Yes,
yeah,
that is something I do need to do.
You need to do that. You don't want her. Because, they are insidiously evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you know that they have the kind of ability to influence, because we have police officers in the school. That is the worst place for police officers. So if you've got these police officers who somebody thought was a good idea, they work with children,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
And then you've got these school resource officers who criminalize juvenile behavior
mm-hmm.
because when your response is a police officer, any response is a police response.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to get police out of the school.
Yes.
You want to save some money? Get police out of the schools. There's no reason to have police inside the school buildings.
Because
all we're doing is criminalizing children.
Children, yes.
Again, the number's call is 503-231-8187. We are getting minus on minutes. I do want to let folks know that there are community members that are stepping up and surrounding you with love and
thank
support.
Mm-hmm.
We want the public to know that that if people want to know more, they can either contact me on
mm-hmm.
my Facebook page for Voices from the Edge,
mm-hmm.
and I can tell you how you can get connected and be of help to this effort. If this is happening to one mom, it's happening to other moms in this community. The only difference is that most people don't speak up. They just move. They just try to just keep going on with their life and try to stay out of police officers' way. But that's not a way to live. If these police officers are acting unconstitutionally, they should not have a job.
Right.
And certainly, at a minimum, Officer David McCarthy and Matthew Husbeck, they shouldn't be anywhere around children at all ever again in life.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably are on a promotion list because that's how Mike Reese rolls.
Mm-hmm.
If you are an egregious police officer, we want to promote you.
Mm-hmm.
If you are doing good community policing, like the officer that I read about who bought a family a night hotel stay and put them up until they could get connected to services. Those are younger police officers. There are some good younger police officers,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
they're going to beat the humanity out of them
if
they're going to stay on the force.
Yes.
And that's the problem. I have run into a couple of police officers later that I thought, wow, I didn't know we had police officers that good on Portland Police Bureau police force.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the decision makers are horrific.
Yeah.
So we're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, LJ. Welcome to K-Boo.
Hey, Joanne. How are you?
I am fabulous, LJ. How about you?
I'm a little upset.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been upset ever since. I've had a week to get this out of my system, but I'm still a little annoyed.
when you first had LaToya on, And I heard the story, Joanne and Latoya, my blood was boiling. and I called, but unfortunately it was the end of the show, and so I couldn't get on.
Right. All right,
here's the deal. Now this young lady is already in the system.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Because everything is done by computer these days.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. Now here is a childhood incident that may be following her for the rest of her life.
That's right. That's right. Right. Because employers ask, have you ever been arrested? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you imagine being, 17, 18, getting your first fast food job? Yep. And they say, have you ever been arrested? Well, I was once at 9.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, that whole little box thing. Have you ever been convicted of a felony?
That's mm-hmm. right.
Boom. You're done. Mm-hmm. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my thought, Joanne, is that being this happened when she was a juvenile,
yes,
will her records be sealed or will they be open to?
Well, not necessarily, and it depends. If Portland police kill you, they can unseal your juvenile record.
Uh-huh.
Because we learned that when Keith Notice was killed.
Yeah,
right?
I remember.
Right? So, if they kill you, all of a sudden, anything that's supposed to be secret, because he had no criminal record as an adult.
Right.
So they had to actually go and unseal his juvenile record to find anything that was illegal in his background.
Right. To kind of justify his execution.
Right. To kind of justify the execution. That's mm-hmm. absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So anyway, Ms. Latoya, our heart goes out to you. We stand in solidarity with you. And I don't know how to put this exactly, but when Aaron Campbell was murdered by
right.
Fresh Hour,
right.
and the Campbell family made a to-do about it, they were harassed by the police department.
Yes, they were.
Yes,
they were.
Right.
They were horribly harassed.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
it didn't stop until Reverend Haynes called the mayor and said, tell the police chief to tell his people to knock it off.
Back off, yeah, really.
It changed after that. Before mm-hmm. that, they were harassing them, searching them, following them. Exactly the kind of behavior Latoya described.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So
any which way, stay strong, Latoya. You have the community behind you.
Thank you.
And we love you, and keep the faith, okay?
Thank you
okay, so much. You too. And so one of the things that I know Latoya needs is a lawyer desperately. And so if you know of a lawyer that takes on these kind of cases, if there's a lawyer out there listening that's intrigued by the fact that some idiot officers could arrest a 9-year-old and fingerprint them and take them to jail and all that nonsense,
mm-hmm.
Look me up on Facebook, Voices from the Edge, or Joanne Hardesty, either way is fine,
mm-hmm.
and I will connect you with Latoya,
mm-hmm.
and we will see what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we have learned, and what's really sad about this, what we've learned is that the only way to get justice is to file multi-million-dollar lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay for the family that ends up getting the multi-million-dollar settlement, but it's not okay for the rest of us who still have to live with this kind of egregious characters who are operating as if they are there to protect and serve us.
Right.
They're not there to protect and serve us. They're there to make a paycheck, and they're there to make as much overtime as they possibly can. So when I heard about the quote-unquote gang summit that the city of Portland and the police put on at in North Portland on last Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor's office message is the community should be snitching on people who are committing crimes. Well, the biggest criminals that are operating in Northeast Portland and in Outer Southeast are Portland police officers,
mm-hmm.
and we don't have a venue in order to hold them accountable. You won't hold them accountable. The so-called Independent Police Review won't hold them accountable. And so as the public, we're going to have to take back ownership of our community police force and actually tell them that we don't want them doing mental health. We don't want them doing alcohol and drug assessment. We don't want them harassing our kids. We want them to actually solve crimes. Mm-hmm. We had 10 murders last year. 6 of them are still unsolved. We have 1,000 police officers. You would think if you can't solve murders, then why are you there? Why do we have a police force? That's what we need you to do. I am Joanne Hardesty. This has been Voices from the Edge. Thank you, LaToya Harris. Stay connected to your case. We will make sure to work with you to get justice. See you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. Thank you, Steve. You are fabulous as always. Bye. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that bitter is cold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. 1 minute now before 9 a.m. on your Thursday morning. We're about an hour away from Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Before that, at 9:30, it'll be Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering interviews Zahir Wahab on the wretched state of Afghanistan and the incredible resilience of the common people. And then at 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, a report from an international solidarity activist currently in the Gaza Strip. Ali Abunima of the Electronic Intifada discusses a peace proposal being floated by Hamas. And the director of the National Day Labor Organizing Network talks about the politics of immigration in the U.S. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Jay Thiemeyer speaks with Portland writer Smith Henderson about his highly praised novel, 4th of July Creek. Set in Montana, the story explores the complexities of freedom, community, grace, and suspicion, and anarchy. That's all coming up, but first it is Press Watch at 9 o'clock with Teresa Mitchell. Hear the news you're not supposed to know. That is coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Pop Now 2014. From Friday, July 18th until Sunday, July 20th, PDX Pop Now will host bands on two stages, celebrating and supporting all ages music in the city of Portland, with bands such as The Bugs, The Portland Cello Project, The Estranged, Purse Candy, Orchestra Pacific Tropical, Summer Cannibals, and many more. PDX Pop will take place at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Avenue in Portland. More information about PDX Pop Now 2014 can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.